Welcome to the show that has it all. This is the Betfred Super League.
What a game!
Champions, challengers, newcomers, league's faithful, hold on tight. This is the Betfred Super League 2024. There's nothing like league. Yeah.
Took a big chunk.
Bleeding. It's bleeding.
Oh no, it's bleeding. The thing just ripped my ear off. What do you think?
Welcome to this latest edition of Eddie and Steve-O, the podcast, and a special edition this is too. Only a select handful of rugby league personalities have been heard on these podcasts more than once in the past few years, and this week we add another. Paul Cullen spoke to us a while ago about his rugby league career and his role these days on the Match Review panel, that august body of men who decide who is and who isn't to be brought up before the game's disciplinary panel after the red and yellow cards issued during the games every week throughout the season. Well, here now, Paul makes his second appearance because in a few months' time, a mural of him depicting the final ever game at the former home of the Warrington Wolves, the old Wilderspool ground, will be unveiled on the wall of a Grade 2 listed building, right next door to the new ground, the Halliwell Jones Stadium. It's a huge honour for a local lad born and bred in the town, and I've been chatting to Paul this week all about it. Paul, a mural on the wall of the King's Head in Warrington. You're going to be the centrepiece of it. How on earth did that come about?
Well, just captures a moment, Ed. I'm really, really proud, really humble, to be honest, that I was just the right bloke at the right time in the right place. You know, so it's all about Wyre to Wolves. It's about Wilderspool to the Halliwell Jones. You know, the movement of the Warrington Rugby League Club from where it was to where it is now. And that transformation, I just happened to be the bloke that was running the club at that time. And all those involved with the club will never ever forget that last game at Wilderspool when we beat a more than reasonable Wakefield Trinity side at the time. Fantastic day. And the picture, the mural, just encapsulates that moment in time. Because I think I said it at the time that that had really nothing to do with rugby league, because Wilderspool was such an iconic place in the hearts and minds and souls of the people of Warrington that it meant more than just winning or losing a game of rugby league. It really did. You know, it's where we went with our families, and people to this day still remember that final official game at Wilderspool. So for that to go up as an art installation on the side of the King's Head, right next to Central Station, which you know, it's a significant part of Warrington, and it'll be also part of the regeneration of that side of town. So really pleased, really humble, and delighted, to be honest.
I'm sure you are, and rightly so. I mean, I've seen the picture that is going to be turned into the mural, and it's one that people will remember because it was published at the time. You've got one hand raised, a beaming smile on your face, and people like Paul Derbyshire are in the picture as well, and he's going to be part of the mural too. I mean, it's a fantastic thing. It really is.
It's a brilliant idea. I love the concept. I love the fact it's coming through from, you know, the arts department of Warrington Borough Council. You know, this is not necessarily a rugby league thing. Rugby league's just the vehicle for it, and I'm so pleased with that, because we know that rugby league is such an important part of the lives of the people of Warrington. But the fact that Darves is on it as well makes it even more special. Paul was a great player for the club, and like me at the time, had spent a lot of time working at the club in the background, and without sounding arrogant in any way, shape or form, that's probably the only game I've ever been involved in as a player, as a captain or as a coach that I absolutely knew we weren't going to get beat.
Really?
And there wasn't many Warringtonians involved in the team or the coaching staff at that time. There really wasn't, but the guys bought in. You know, if you think of the effort of people like Nathan Wood, fantastic bloke, great character, you know, and set about Wakefield. And Lee Braze was brilliant, but so was every other player. And again, if you look back through the actual team, not many Warringtonians. It was Wiganers, St Helena's, guys from Widnes, guys from Australia and New Zealand, all absolutely bought in to what that game, that final game at Wilderspool, meant to the good people of Warrington. And again, we were never, ever going to lose that match and go out of Wilderspool on a whimper. We went out on a high and arrived at the Halliwell Jones against Wakefield by sheer coincidence in a similar manner, you know. And
you won that one as well.
And we won it as well. So we left with dignity and we arrived with dignity and we offered the Warrington fans promise and potential. And that's what that transformation, that era was all about.
You said it was the first game that you ever went into knowing you wouldn't be beaten. Was there a thought in the back of your mind, blimey, we daren't lose this game?
Absolutely, Ed. You were driven by fear. And literally, you know, there were sleepless nights building up into that game. Because as a coach, you fully understand that you're not in control of everything. You know, there's never a game of football, rugby league, rugby union, where at some point in a season, the bottom four club beats the top four club. It happens every year. You know, and Wakefield at that point are a mid-table club. They had some really good players. I think the current South coach, Jason Dimitru, you know, South Sydney Rabbitohs, he played in that side. I spent some time with him in Australia over Christmas, and he was regaling that match. They went there thinking they were going to beat us and spoil the party. They were very confident going to Wilderspool on that final day. But the players were just in a very determined mood, and there was no way we were going to let them beat us on that day. Whether it had been Wakefield or Wigan or St Helens or Bradford, some of the bigger teams, Leeds of the day, that was always going to be a victory for Warrington. I was absolutely assured of it.
And the memory is there now for time immemorial. I mean, it's there and it will not be taken down because the King's Head is a listed building, so it's never going to be demolished. How does it feel to know that your mug is going to be on that wall forever?
Well, I'm really proud. You know, I was born and bred not far from there. You know, in Orford Avenue in Orford. You know, it's a part of town that I know very, very well. You know, it's on the A49. It's the main vein that still drives right through the heart of Warrington. You know, so I've spent virtually all my life at some point driving up and down the A49. You know, and the fact it's going to be on the King's Head and the fact it's an art installation more than anything else really pleases me, you know. So, but, you know, again, I'm just the lucky guy that was in charge at that point. I represent all the Warrington players that have played in the Primrose and Blue before me and hopefully all those that are going to follow. And more importantly, all the Warrington fans that understand that we were Wilderspool and we were the Wire before we were Halliwell Jones and the Wolves. And that journey is very important to me. Again, by sheer luck, I'm coaching the club at that transitional point. But it's up there, it'll be up there forever and no one can take it away.
Absolutely not. And as you say, you are a local lad, you're still living in the town of Warrington, so you will probably, I mean, if I were you, I'd be driving past it every day to make sure that the paint hasn't washed off in the rain. But it's going to be there forever. And okay, there's people like Brian Bevan and all the rest, the great names who've played for Warrington in the past and in the present. I can't think, and I'm not blowing smoke anywhere here, I can't think of anyone more suitable to be on that mural, if I'm honest. I think it's a fantastic thing for you personally. You must be thrilled.
I am. I'm thrilled, Eddie, and I'm really proud, and I'm really humbled by it, to be honest. You know, I never class myself ever have done or ever will do in the category of some of the players that you've mentioned. You know, some of the greats of the club, the Bevans, John and Brian, Challoners, some of the modern greats as well, you know, and some of the Australians that have graced our club, the likes of Les Boyd and Brian Johnson, etc., etc. Brilliant players that have been great servants to our club. But again, it's for me, it's just captures that moment. Mm. Because all those that went before me, and I was at the club, I signed for Warrington in 1980. So when we've left, I think in, was it 2003, you know, I've been part of some good and bad times at Warrington Rugby League Club. The good, the bad, and sometimes the very, very ugly. And again, I just kind of represent all those players that have played at the club, the good days, the bad days, and how the club has grown. You know, Warrington Rugby League Club now, as it is not the same club as it was then. You know, nowadays, the club is very, very well backed and very well supported, and spends full salary cap every year. Well, I think my final year at Warrington in 2008 was the first time that we'd ever spent full salary cap. We were always the underdog, always chasing Wigan, St Helens, Leeds, Bradford, the genuine big four of the modern era. Well, that's probably down now to the big two, which is St Helens and Wigan. Leeds are still there or thereabout, and Bradford, God love them, are nowhere to be seen. No. You know, so it does show, Ed, that the club has to be run properly. It has to be run right. And I was always convinced that my time at Warrington, we were leaving it in a better place than which we picked it up, because, you know, that season 2002 is arguably the worst season in the history of Warrington Rugby League Club until possibly 2022, the 20-year cycle.
But remember, in 2002, you saved the club. I mean, I know it's a unifying thing, and it's a conglomerate thing. You're all in it together. You as coach, again, not trying to be smart, you saved Warrington from the ignominy of going into the Championship.
Well, I honestly don't know whether Warrington as a club would have ever survived relegation.
No, never.
The fact that we are the only one, if not one of two or three, that have never played outside the top flight in rugby league since, you know, since the 1800s, is something that the Warrington fans and Warrington public are very, very proud of. And at one point in that season, 2002, Warrington are sitting 12th out of 12. I think when I took over, we were 11th out of 12, and we finished 10th out of 12. I had six games, and we lost the first two to Wigan and Widnes, two very, very strong teams in that era. And we beat Halifax, and I think we beat Castleford to mathematically stay up, and then fell to pieces and lost the other two. You know, arguably probably the weakest squad that Warrington have ever put on a park was in 2002. It's not my opinion. I think the record books state that. You know, 2022 wasn't great, because Warrington finished 11th out of 12, arguably the worst record of, it is in the history of the club. They've never finished second bottom. Fortunately, we've never finished actual bottom, especially when there's relegation as it currently now is. You know, so, but that was about doing something different and changing things, because I think I was the fourth coach in 12 calendar months.
Yes.
And I honestly don't think I was first choice when I was the fourth coach. You know, I know...
You're always modest.
Well, but it was a fact, Ed. I knew it. And I'd already done my due diligence. I'd done my due diligence in the previous 15 years that I played for the club. And I'd captained it, and I'd worked for two or three years as an assistant coach. I knew it very well. I knew it intimately, inside and out. I knew the good stuff and I knew the bad stuff. And the message when I came back was that this is not acceptable. If we want to play, we've got to play with some pride, we've got to play with some courage, and we've got to play with some flair. And that was what I tried to bring to Warrington when I came back as coach. Number one, we've got to have a go. It's really simple. We can overcomplicate things as coaches, but the bottom line is that I'm going to hit you more than you're going to hit me. And I've got to run harder than you run hard. And I've got to create more than you create. And if I don't get any of that right, or any combination of that right, we're going to lose, and we're going to lose badly. And the players were shot to pieces. I think the team had been put together poorly. It just didn't fit. You know, you're forcing square pegs into round holes, and some clubs, some players don't suit some clubs.
So how did you manufacture the two wins that you needed out of the six that remained when you turned up? How did you manufacture those wins, bearing in mind what you've just said, that, you know, it was a disjointed bunch, basically?
Simplicity and honesty. That was it. I literally stripped it bare, absolutely stripped it bare. Went to some very, very basic plays, and the whole emphasis was on effort and energy. Effort and energy and passion. And that got us two wins, and then we literally fell to pieces because we had nothing left. You know, you've got second rowers playing in the centre, you had centres playing on the wing, you had back rowers playing at the halfbacks. It just didn't fit. And when I'm looking at it and I look back how the team had developed over that previous season, nothing seemed to fit for me. When I've played in good teams at Warrington, and I've played in bad teams as well, and I've played well and I've played poorly, when it fits, it works. You've got the right people in the right place doing the right thing for the right reason. And it sounds really simple, but it's not that simple to create. People, players just generally wanted direction. They wanted honesty, they wanted simplicity, and they wanted direction. And they wanted somebody else to take some responsibility, which I was more than happy to do. So if we'd have gone down, we'd have gone down on my watch. And I was absolutely determined that wasn't going to happen. A little bit like the game against Wakefield at the final game at Wilderspool. That's on my watch. So not everything I did at Warrington was brilliant, and not everything worked. It quite clearly didn't. You know, I left in 2008, but life had changed at that point. But it was about simplicity and honest and taking responsibility for who you are and who you're playing for. Players need to play for something, Ed. They need to play for a group of supporters and a club that respects them and wants them. And if that equation isn't quite right, you can get hammered on a regular basis.
And that mantra really holds true today. You know, you see clubs that have got players from all over the world, and I'm not just talking rugby league now, football as well, you know. But if they've got a heart and they've got a beating heart, and they know and they're told by somebody like you what it means to this town, that city, this club, that club, you can't fail but to be impressed and to be inspired by that.
Well, you're absolutely right, Eddie. That group, there was some absolute nuggets of gold within that group. But I think by the time Andrew Johns arrived in 2005, and we took over in the latter stages of 2002, only five players were still at the club. Lee Brays, Ben Westwood, Nathan Wood, Mark Hilton, and John Clark.
Wow. So, and you as coach.
And me as the coach, and Paul Darbish and Gary Chambers on the coaching staff. So we were moving 12 to 13 players on in 2003 and again in 2004. So from the team that played and the squad that was there at the end of 2002, only five remained. Three years later when Andrew Johns played in that brilliant game.
What a night.
Yes, and you played your part. The commentary is iconic. The game was iconic. You know, Henry Farfield scored that first try. Halliwell Jones has never seen a night before it, and it's never seen one night, since. No.
It was sensational from start to finish. Look, you've lived in the town all your life. You've been steeped in Warrington's history all your life. You're a modest... I've never known anyone so modest in all my lifetime about this town, this club. You're going on the wall of a place that will be there forevermore. I'm going to read you now the first line of a little report that went in the Warrington Guardian, the local paper in Warrington, when this news was first announced. Wire legend Paul Cullen has given his thoughts on plans to create a mural of him on the side of a pub near the Halliwell Jones Stadium. Wire legend. How does that feel?
I feel warm, Eddie. I feel pleased. I feel proud. But playing for Warrington was just a bonus. It was my bonus. It's not for anyone else. It was for me. And that was about me and my dad taking me to the games. It was our dad and lad days. They didn't really exist back in then. It's just where we went. You know, I'm one of four. I've got three sisters. You know, my sisters basically went with my mum, and me and my dad went the game. Bit old-fashioned in the day, but it worked for us. It worked for us as a family, you know, and I followed Warrington with my dad everywhere. So the fact I got the chance to play rugby league for Warrington was my bonus. And I loved every single second of it, even the injuries, the horrible stuff, the suspensions, and my goodness, there was more than enough of them. But you just developed a way of playing. I knew I was never the best player to play for Warrington, but I played 350 games. Mm. So someone thought there was some value in me at some point. But the fact it's in Warrington is my bonus, and that's the way I see it. You know, so when there are bad days, and there are, as a player, and even since, you know, and you question and you think deeply about, you know, how your life's been and how it's turned out, there's stuff in there that people will never ever be able to take away from you.
Absolutely not. They won't.
And the mural's one of them. The mural just encapsulates a moment in time, and I think back of the joy on my face and what I felt that, and my good friend Paul Derbyshire next to me, of what that meant to us as blokes who had given an awful lot to the cause, And it was captured by Mike Bowden, the Guardian photographer, who'd lured his trade, you know, at the Warrington Guardian, as you did, your good self.
Indeed.
You know,
special moment, special memory for him as well, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And they've, you know, and whether it was Eddie or whether it was Mike, the Guardian photographers who served the Guardian and the Warrington fans so well with the brilliant photographs they've took throughout their careers, is that, you know, that they've photographed Brian Bevan and John Bevan and Mike Nicholas and Alex Murphy and a Warrington team that won five trophies in 1 year. You know, so I find myself in good company and I'm really pleased and proud of it.
Well, congratulations. Many, many congratulations. And personally, I'm thrilled for you and I can't think of anyone better to be on the wall of that pub in Warrington. 2008, you left. So what are we now, 16, 17 years on?
Yes.
Do you miss it?
I miss it desperately. I do, but it's one of them. If you don't want to, if you don't want to, or you can't do 24/7, 365, don't coach, because it'll find you out. And the people that are under your leadership and guidance require that. And I don't particularly want that in my life anymore.
No. But he couldn't walk down the street, could he? If you got beaten on a Friday night or a Saturday afternoon or Sunday, you couldn't walk down the street without people coming up to you and saying, what the hell went wrong?
Well, Eddie, honestly, God, I used to love that.
Did you?
Honestly. And people would say...
Because you put them right.
Well, I'd have a conversation. I'd have a conversation and I would have an answer. And if we'd been beaten, we played poorly, I'd be honest with that answer. You know, so... But it's one of them that people say, oh, you must have got a load of grief and a load of stick and a load of abuse. Absolutely none. No one's ever said anything negative to me or to my face, ever. There's probably a reason for that, to be honest. But I didn't mind that. You know, if you wanted to find me in Warrington, I wasn't that hard to find.
No.
And still not these days. But I do understand one of the hardest jobs I've ever, if not the hardest I've ever had in my life, was when I worked for the club commercially. And the chairman, Peter Hyam, and his wife, Mary, began to create the Warrington Lottery. It was £1 a week, Ed. And we had to go to, and I'm working for the club commercially then, and we visited every workplace in Warrington, north, south, east and west. Greenhalls, Tetley Walkers, Lockers, all the wire factories and steel factories. And there was one, and it was a place called TI New World on in Latchford on the far point near on the other side of the locks. And it was a, if you look at, say, I don't know, like the Peaky Blinders now, yeah. And you can see that, yeah. Kind of imagine that, where they're walking through a factory and there's all sparks and steel and it's grim and it looks like the 1930s. That's what that factory reminded me of, and people like places like Ryland Steel. And we were walking the shop floor, tapping people on the shoulder, asking them to give us a quid, £1, to join the Life Wire, the Warrington Lottery. The bottling plants at Tetley Walkers and Greenhalls, people are grafting 40 hours a week, hard manual labour. And me and Mary and Peter, Ken Folks, those that were running the lottery were tapping people on the shoulder on the production lines. And they're giving us £1 out their wages that they couldn't afford to give us to keep the club afloat. And getting £1 off someone when they're working with a welding machine and sparks are flying everywhere and they don't know who you are. And by the way, you just got beat at Leeds by the previous weekend. So you're getting a load of grief and people want to know that they've spent their hard-earned money to travel to Headingley to watch you get beat by Leeds, and then you're tapping them on the shoulder on the production line at Greenhalls. Well, you're connected to the club, and if you weren't before it, you're certainly connected after it. And I've never forgot that. So when we're leaving Wilderspool, that really resonates. We're leaving behind people who've given an awful lot to this club, and we're creating, when we go to Halliwell Jones, something that people want to be a part of. There's a connection there with the people of Warrington that's unbreakable. So in terms of being proud, that's what I'm proud of, because I know what I'm playing for. I know what I was coaching. I know what I captained. And it wasn't just about a game of rugby league. It means more to the people of this town than simply sport.
Fantastic. I mean, you talk so passionately about the club, about the town, about the people. As I say, the mural is just a rubber stamp on what you've done for everything in this town. And I know now you are on the other side of the fence completely. Yes. And here we are, 5, 6, 7 weeks in to to the new season, and you are responsible for the suspensions and the discipline. You're part of the what do they call it? The match review
panel. Yes.
Yeah. And so you again are getting grief from all sides because of the way A, the season starts, and 2 weeks in, everything changes. We can all understand why it has to be the way it has to be, because player safety is paramount, absolutely paramount. But the first 2 weeks of the 2024 season must have been very difficult to handle, I would think, because everyone was on your back. It was the new clampdown, and lo and behold, after 2 weeks, the clampdown disappears.
Yes, the RFL had to recalibrate. And it's a simple equation. Ed, the way that we survive in this is, it's process, and after that, follow the process. The process has got to be right. And there's a reasonable argument to say that that was calibrated a little bit too high. So I don't think, in terms of match review, we were charging people at the wrong grades given the instructions that we were given at that point. When the RFL then need to recalibrate and that was readjusted, we then readjusted accordingly.
Right.
I think the thing that really changed it was the mistake of sending New Brown off for the clash of heads with Ben Curry. So that was a rule, and I understand why the rule was brought in, that was translated in far too hard a degree. That's about when a player does not get out the headspace of a man carrying a ball. That's clashing heads. That's forehead to chin. And it breaks people's jaws. So the match officials got that wrong because they sent New Brown off.
Because that just was
a clash of heads. Yes. And by the way, why did the RFL go that hard in the first place? Because those clashes of heads, head to jaw, head to cheekbone, head to temple, they are statistically the worst types of head collision. It's harder than a forearm. It's harder than a shoulder, because it's the skull. It's the forehead hitting the face. So when the research has been done, they are the worst types of injury that are causing most concussions. So it's that the game wants rid of. The lawyers want rid of it. The medics want rid of it. And then we have to try and craft a game around it that still has some semblance of what the game was originally designed to be for everyone. So they went a little bit too hard. They got it wrong, and on Monday morning, we didn't charge New Brown.
No.
So a player's been sent off. It affected Hull's performance in that game. They were badly beaten by Warrington. I'm not suggesting if New Brown had stayed on the field, they would have beaten Warrington. However, a player was sent off, and I thought they got it wrong. And when we met on the Monday morning, we didn't charge him. We didn't charge him, didn't try and drop it down to a sin bin. We didn't charge him at grade F, E, D, C, B, or A, because that's the transgression going downwards. We went, we don't agree, that's an accident, and then the RFL recalibrated at that point. So I'm really proud of what the match review panel did there. You know, blind obedience doesn't work at any point in anyone's life, in any democracy. It doesn't work.
No, it's good that you can change and circumstances alter cases. We all understand that.
Yeah.
These new rules, these new guidelines, in many ways, they've been brought in by the clubs themselves. They all voted for it.
Absolutely.
You had meetings before the season and they all went with it.
Every single year, the RFL debates and works with all stakeholders, and that's basically all the 12 Super League clubs and then Championship and League One, accordingly. So all clubs agree with that to get the payout they get from the RFL have to be able to insure the game. And if the insurance doubles, trebles and quadruples, and it possibly can and will do, it simply means that the clubs are getting less money from the central fund. And that is the RFL with what they can gather from the clubs and from the media deals. So the more you spend on insurance, the less you give to clubs. So clubs are always very, very willing to work with the RFL because the RFL are responsible for getting the game on the field. And if you've not got insurance, the game doesn't exist. It would stop overnight. So it's a little bit disingenuous at some point then when players are charged, you've agreed with the rules and then you say you don't agree with the rules.
Yeah. Do the coaches always come on to you? Are you bombarded by phone calls, texts, WhatsApps, whatever you like, messages on your phone that, hey, you've got this wrong?
Well, I beat them to it, Eddie, because I ring the coaches every Monday. I contact all coaches on a Monday to let them know whether players are charged or not. And if they are charged, I let them know how we've charged, why we've charged, and what our rationale is for that charge and how we've got to those grades. It's polite, it's respectful, as it should be. And then they can challenge, go up on a Tuesday night, and if they don't like that, they can appeal on a Wednesday. So it's a very thorough and fair legal process. It stands scrutiny, it really does. And you've got three independent bodies making those decisions. Match officials, 0 to 80, match review panel, cold light today on a Monday morning, and then the judge and jury, the ORT, Operational Rules Tribunal, on a Tuesday night, which is a Crown Court judge and two ex-internationals. So if you've not been banned or charged and suspended at the end of that process, there's a reasonable thought process that you probably shouldn't have been.
Right.
If you have been charged and suspended, also, there's a reasonable theory that you've earned it. And there's more than enough there. So at some point, we'll charge someone with a grade D. They'll go up on a Tuesday night, but they'll then present to the court. They then bring different evidence. A court will be persuaded by the player, the coach, the chief executive, the owner. But that's the full process. It mimics the British judicial system. You know, you're not guilty. When, you know, sometimes when on a Monday morning when a player's been charged, it'll go, he's been charged at grade D and he's been banned for three games. It's a myth. It doesn't exist. No one's banned until Tuesday night. You can either plead guilty, and most do, or you can challenge, and the judge will find you guilty. The match review panel don't suspend any player, and they don't find any player guilty. They simply assess the tackle, assess the misconduct, and charge accordingly. And then a player can defend himself and provide as much evidence as he can, or not, as the case may be, and either be found guilty or cleared. It works. It's a proper, decent, thorough process. It's robust. It stands scrutiny. I'm really proud to be a part of it. And I look at the game differently now than I did, certainly as a player.
I bet you do.
Yeah, well, being suspended for foul play was an occupational hazard, and did it deliberately. There was nothing careless and reckless. It was premeditated and intentional. It was a different game then. But I understand that game can't continue. People were hurt and badly hurt. And this game has a right to survive for decades to come, for generations to come. And that's what this is about, really. That's why I do it.
You've talked passionately about the game of rugby league. You've talked passionately about your role now on the match review panel. And you've talked passionately about your Warrington past and your Warrington history. It's been fantastic to catch up with you again. Very well done, and many congratulations.
Eddie, I really appreciate it. And coming from you, that means an awful lot more. And I, as I said previously, I was listening to the NRL. I was watching the NRL on Sky this morning, and you were commentating at a grand final, Wigan versus Leeds, and your iconic voice and commentary just reverberated around my house. So I think we've earned the right, Ed, that you're right. When we're long gone, the mark that we've made on the game will still be there, and I'm proud of that from what I've done in the game, and I'm proud to be a part of your achievements in the game, because they're iconic. They really are. You know, the combination of Neville Smith, Eddie Hemmings and Mike Stevenson is as much a part of the history of our game as my mug going on the King's Head wall. It really is. It means an awful lot to an awful lot of people. So, you know, I can sit back, Eddie, with pride, not only one what I've done and what I've achieved in the game, but good friends like yourself have done, and how you helped me post-game. Because there's always a life after the game, Ed, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely there is.
And the work we did at Sky, I'll never forget it. The best job I've ever had.
We had great fun, we did.
And
you're making me blush now. And, you know, I'm a newcomer to this town in many ways. I wasn't born here. They put my name on the side of a bus. I'm sure the bus has now been scrapped and is somewhere in the middle of nowhere. But you will be on the side of the King's Head in Warrington forevermore. And again, well done.
Edda. Pleasure. Thanks very much.